Great. Well, during this presentation, I'm going to share findings from an evaluation that we conducted at UNC in partnership with our state's immunization branch. And together, we wanted to assess the impact of the CDC's AFIX model on adolescent immunization, including HPV vaccination. And I'll say more about what our AFIX program looked like in North Carolina later in the talk. But for now, I'll just start by saying that this is an immunization quality improvement program that we see a lot of potential in. At the same time, based on our evaluation, we believe that AFIX really needs some further development before it works the way we want it to, and that's especially true for HPV vaccination. I have no financial relationships to disclose. So this is another study that focuses on all vaccines in the adolescent platform, and again, those are Tdap, meningococcal vaccine, and HPV vaccine. Noel spoke about guidelines for administration, but again, adolescent vaccines are targeted to preteens ages 11 to 12, with older adolescents eligible for catch-up vaccinations. And I'll be talking about both age groups in this presentation. So here again, we see adolescent vaccine coverage in the U.S. for 13 to 17-year-olds, and as Noel mentioned, there's just this really stark contrast between the progress that we're making for meningococcal vaccine and Tdap versus for HPV vaccine. We know that it is possible to vaccinate adolescents, but there's something different about HPV vaccine. One other note before we move on, one thing that these national estimates don't show, and that Noel also mentioned, is that there's a fair amount of variation in vaccine coverage by state, with some states having fairly high levels of coverage and other states having very low levels of coverage. So in Mississippi, for example, only about half of adolescents are currently getting Tdap, as opposed to 85% of adolescents nationally. About 40% get meningococcal vaccine, and only 12% of girls are completing the HPV vaccine series. So when we think about ways to raise vaccine coverage nationally, state-based approaches may be especially promising. So if we look to practice in early childhood immunization, one successful and widely used state-based approach is called AFIX, which stands for Assessment, Feedback, Incentives, and Exchange. AFIX is a model of immunization quality improvement that's been developed by the CDC, and it's currently implemented in state and regional health departments in all 50 states. AFIX is based on a process of what's called assessment and feedback, in which a quality improvement specialist from the health department goes to visit clinicians to give them information about how they're doing in terms of immunizing their patient populations. The specialist may also provide training to clinic staff as well as other resources to kind of incentivize improved performance. Now, among young children, AFIX has been shown to lead to improvements in vaccine coverage of around 4 to 7 percentage points per year, and these improvements typically accumulate over time. So based on that success, CDC recommends that health departments provide AFIX consultations to over a quarter of all federally funded vaccine providers each year. So in other words, this is a program that's already happening on a very big scale for early childhood immunization. And that kind of begs the question of whether we could use the same system to also address under-immunization among adolescents. So with that, let's turn to our two study aims. First, we sought to assess the effectiveness of AFIX consultations for increasing adolescent vaccine coverage. We also wanted to compare two types of AFIX consultation, one delivered in person in the traditional way and one delivered by webinar, and I'll say more about both of those delivery modes. Our sample consisted of 91 high-volume primary care clinics that we randomly selected from our state's immunization registry. These included 53 pediatric clinics and 38 family practice clinics, serving a total of over 100,000 adolescents ages 11 to 18. In terms of our study design, we conducted a randomized controlled trial with our 91 clinics, and we assigned clinics to receive one of three conditions: in-person AFIX consultations, webinar AFIX consultations, or no intervention control. Now, as the name implies, an in-person AFIX consultation was delivered on site, so the immunization specialist actually traveled to the clinic and met with clinicians face-to-face. Webinar consultations were designed to provide the same thing in terms of content, but over the internet. So in this case, the specialist and the clinician did talk to each other in real time, but using video conferencing software. So let me say more about what the AFIX consultations involved. Each clinic in the intervention arm received a single quality improvement session that lasted from about an hour to an hour and a half. The quality improvement specialist typically conducted the sessions with one person in the clinic, usually the nurse who served as the clinic's immunization coordinator. So this was an intervention that was really designed to minimize burden. It required just one meeting with one participant for each clinic. In terms of content, the specialist would begin the meeting by sharing feedback on what percentage of the clinic's population was immunized with each of the adolescent vaccines. Next, the specialist would work with the clinician to assess the extent to which the clinic was using organizational policies and practices that support adolescent immunization. So these best practices including things like using a reminder recall system, reviewing and flagging patient charts to pinpoint missed vaccines, and also scheduling well-child visits for adolescents ages 11 to 12. Based on the results of the assessment, the specialist would provide training to clinicians and would also help them establish goals for improving their vaccine coverage. In terms of our measures, we assessed vaccine coverage using provider records that we obtained from the North Carolina Immunization Registry, or NCIR. And NCIR is an electronic database that has pretty high participation in our state. So in North Carolina, over 90% of primary care providers use the NCIR to document vaccine doses. To assess the effectiveness of each intervention arm versus the control, we used mixed-level Poisson regression, modeling the change in vaccine coverage between baseline and five-month follow-up. We looked at each vaccine individually, and we stratified by age because we wanted to be able to consider younger adolescents in the target age range separately from older adolescents who are eligible for catch-up vaccination. And these models did account for clustering at the clinic level. So let's look now at our main outcomes, which again were assessed at five-month follow-up. On this slide, we see vaccine coverage by study arm for younger adolescents. So these bars represent the number of percentage points by which immunization coverage in each study arm improved for patients ages 11 to 12. The first part in the cluster is the control group, so that shows the secular trend, followed by the in-person group and the webinar group. So this first cluster of bars shows how coverage changed for Tdap. And we can see that for adolescents in the control arm, coverage improved by about 4 percentage points. Adolescents in the two intervention arms had increases in coverage that were closer to 8 percentage points. So we did see an intervention effect with regard to Tdap coverage. We see a similar pattern with regard to meningococcal vaccine, with the intervention arm showing a 4 to 5 percentage point advantage over the control. And finally, for HPV vaccine, we did find a statistically significant intervention effect, but it was smaller, just 1.5 to 2 percentage points over the control. You'll remember that our secondary study aim was to compare the two intervention arms to each other. And as you would probably guess by looking at this graph, we didn't find evidence to suggest that the two delivery modes differed in effectiveness. And this was somewhat of a surprise. Webinar consultations really seemed to impact vaccine coverage as much as traditional in-person visits. Now, we were excited about these five-month findings because they're in keeping with prior research on early childhood vaccination, which, again, has been shown to achieve improvements around 4 to 7 percentage points per year. And unfortunately, an analysis that we conducted of outcomes at 1 year suggests that the improvements we saw at 5 months didn't last. So at 1 year, coverage for Tdap, meningococcal vaccine, and HPV vaccine initiation was about the same across the three arms. So it seems as though our clinics were able to initiate quality improvement efforts, but they weren't able to sustain them over time. Another point of concern is that we found that AFIX did not have an impact on older adolescents, ages 13 to 18, at either the five-month or the one-year time points. And we're not sure why this is, but we believe that future interventions likely need to focus on procedures such as chart review that specifically support catch-up vaccination. So those are our main outcomes, and again, they leave us with both optimism and concern. It appears that AFIX can improve adolescent immunization, at least in the short term, but the intervention is going to need further development before it really works the way we want it to, before it has a more durable and robust effect, and that's particularly important for HPV vaccine. In addition to our outcomes analysis, we also conducted a process evaluation to try to get some insight into what was happening at 5-month follow-up and also to further compare our two delivery modes, in-person versus webinar AFIX. Here we see a comparison of the two delivery modes on cost. So overall, we estimate that in 5 months, the intervention resulted in the delivery of over 1,800 additional vaccine doses, 833 doses in the in-person arm, and 1,028 additional doses in the webinar arm. Again, we were somewhat surprised to find that the webinar consultations appeared to be as effective as the in-person ones. And this is really great news because webinar could obviously do a lot to improve the feasibility of AFIX just by eliminating the travel cost and the inconvenience associated with actually having to go to the clinics and meet with clinicians face-to-face. In our process evaluation, we found that we were able to deliver webinar consultations at about 2/3 the cost of in-person ones. So there's a real cost savings here. We estimate that in-person consultations cost about $150 per clinic to deliver, or well over $5 per additional vaccine dose. And by contrast, webinar consultations cost $100 per clinic to deliver, or just at $3 per additional vaccine dose. Just in terms of what's being compared here, we found that webinar consultations took a little bit longer to deliver, so about 90 minutes instead of 60 minutes for the in-person visits. There was also a software hosting fee to use the video conferencing software, but you still came out way ahead because you weren't having to pay for travel costs, or even more importantly, the staff time spent in travel. So again, we found a cost savings with webinar delivery. We also assessed a few intermediate outcomes, and the most important of these were related to participants' use of the registry's reminder recall system. So both in-person and webinar consultations included training to show participants how to use the registry to generate automated reminders that would call patients back to the clinic when they were due for vaccines. And to see how effective this training was, we assessed participants' confidence for using the reminder recall system at 3 time points: immediately before the training, immediately after the training, and then again at 5-month follow-up. In this graph, the first cluster bar shows results for participants in the in-person arm, and the second cluster shows the webinar arm. We see a really similar pattern of findings for both groups. Trainings had the immediate effect of raising confidence, and that improvement in confidence persisted at 5 months. Confidence did not differ by study arm at any of the 3 time points. So again, it appears that the two delivery modes were comparably effective. I'll also note that at 5 months follow-up, about half of participants in each study arm reported that they had been making more effort to use the registry's reminder recall system. So that was encouraging as well. Now, last but not least, we wanted to gauge participant satisfaction. Primary care clinics are obviously very busy places. And one of the challenges to doing immunization quality improvement work is developing interventions that are practical, that are brief and easy enough to use that providers can actually fit them into their day. So immediately following the AFIX consultation, we had participants rate our intervention on a number of measures, including helpfulness, ease of understanding, and most importantly, I think, convenience. And we were encouraged to see that both the intervention arms received high ratings. The averages were well over 4 points on a 5-point scale. So regardless of delivery mode, the intervention appears to have been well received. So to briefly sum up, we found that AFIX modestly increased uptake of adolescent vaccines for 11 to 12-year-olds in the target age range at 5 months. The intervention did not improve catch-up vaccination for older adolescents, and it was less effective for HPV vaccination. By 1 year of follow-up, the intervention lost effectiveness. In terms of our delivery mode comparison, webinar consultations appear to have been as effective as in-person ones, and this finding may have a lot of relevance for increasing the efficiency of AFIX, since we found that webinar consultations could be delivered for about 2/3 the cost of in-person ones. So what does this mean for HPV vaccination? Well, we continue, like I said, to see a lot of potential for using AFIX to improve vaccine coverage because the model offers some real advantages. It's brief, it's relatively low cost, and most importantly, we already have the national infrastructure we need to deliver adolescent AFIX visits, because state health departments are already delivering them for early childhood immunization. So in these ways, it's just an opportunity that's too good to pass up. To capitalize on the potential, though, we'll obviously need to improve AFIX consultations, and this is especially true for HPV vaccine. So one exciting note is that our study team was recently funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation to try to do just that. We're going to be working with three state health departments to try to improve adolescent AFIX protocols so that they focus specifically on HPV vaccination. We also want to try to improve the program with regard to catch-up doses and think about ways of making the intervention more durable in terms of its effects. So, for example, by using booster sessions or some other follow-up with clinics that receive the intervention. Once we finish the formative research and intervention development, we'll then conduct a randomized controlled trial of 270 clinics in our three states to further evaluate effectiveness. So I'd like to close by acknowledging my colleagues at UNC, Noel, of course, our PI, also Alicia Sparks, and Jennifer Moss, who will be our next speaker. And I'll mention once more our partners at the North Carolina Division of Public Health, who include Amanda Dayton and Amy Grimshaw in the immunization branch. Again, they're the ones who actually designed and delivered our AFIX consultations, and they're doing really phenomenal work in our state. In fact, they have won several national practice awards for this project in particular, so I'd like to thank them. So that wraps up my presentation, and I'm happy to take questions if I have time. Okay. Any questions?
Okay, we have time for a question or two.
You spoke of heartbreaking things, and that was one of the heartbreaks in our study. We should have the capacity to do that, but something happened in the software that the branch uses. So, and we weren't able to for this particular study. But you should be able to, yeah, to track and see who, to count the actual number of times that each clinic runs a reminder recall system. So in future studies, we hope to be able to do that, yeah.
Other questions? Yeah.
That was a great presentation. I was thinking about the loss that you had in a year, and I'm wondering about turnover in your clinic as far as the person who would be making recommendations and trying to get vaccines implemented. Was there turnover there that might have?
That's not something we've discussed, but it would be very interesting, I think, to look into, just given the challenges of staffing, to staffing clinics, for sure. I'd be very interested in that, yeah. Other reasons that we've thought of, at some point after the interventions, clinics get a follow-up on, how much that, on their coverage rates, so that's meant to encourage them further, to show them, oh, look, here's how far you've come. I also wonder whether that was perceived as being a sort of end to the program, so that they received the follow-up coverage estimates, and instead of being really motivated to keep going, they thought, okay, we've done that, let's move on to our next project in the clinic. But yeah, we're still thinking about reasons why this would happen, yeah. So thank you for that idea.
The data are pretty dramatic. I mean, one read of them is that the intervention helped up until 5 months, and then it hurt from 5 months to a year. And in hurting, it undid all the beneficial effects.
Yeah. The other thing I'll mention is that in more qualitative comments, some clinics reported that they were trying to do this intervention at the same time that they were instituting electronic health records. And so there may have been some competition, too, in terms of just what they could do in a year, since that's obviously also a pretty arduous undertaking, from my understanding.
Mm-hmm.
That's a connection that we're really interested in strengthening going forward, because typically that's what the immunization coordinator within the clinic is instructed to do, to disseminate the results, to bring it up at meetings, to share the results. It's a great question and idea, because we just don't know the extent to which that happens.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, typically a nurse, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Thank you.